Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Trana. Thanks for tuning in. We've got Kurt Menefee from the NFL on Fox pregame show on this episode. Good interview with Kurt. Covered a lot of things, and he was very, very interesting. So you guys will enjoy that. A couple of notes here before we get rolling. Last week, we had Jim Miller on. There was some Apple glitch for some people, not for all, where the episode didn't hit your download on Apple. But the podcast is there and available. So if you go to Spotify or Stitcher or just Google it and use another form to listen, you can hear it. So check that out in the archives. It was a good discussion about Monday Night Football and Tony Romo and the future of how they can work maybe together or not together. So that was Jim Miller from last week. So check that out. Also in the archives, we did a big year in review show at the end of 2019. Kyle Brand from Good Morning Football was on. So all those are in the archives. So check those out. Download, rate, review, subscribe. Next week, Brent Musburger will be on. And the week after that, Kevin Harlan will be on the podcast. He's calling the Super Bowl for Westwood One on radio. So we'll get to speak to them before the big game on February 2nd. Fox has the Super Bowl this year, so and they do a five-hour pregame. So that's why we wanted to talk to Kurt Menefee from Fox. And we get into some Super Bowl stuff, pregame, good stories about Terry Bradshaw, working with Gronk this year, how he got the job from James Brown. Covered a lot of ground, and we'll get to it right now. Kurt Menefee from Fox Sports. All right, joining me now, first time, I think, here on the SI Media podcast. He is the longtime host of the NFL on Fox pregame show that we have all watched for many years, Kurt Menefee. Kurt, how's it going?
Great to be with you, Jimmy.
Thanks for coming on. I know this is a big time there in the Fox family with you guys having the Super Bowl on February 2nd, coming up here in a few weeks. So it's always got to be an extra fun year for you guys when you know you have the big game at the end of the season.
Yeah, no, it moves the finish line back a little bit. Oh, because in the we get it every third year. So 2 years that you don't have it, this would be the last Sunday of football for us. So, but you get extended, and then I've got XFL duties this year as well. So it's, I don't know if this is the midway point, just beyond the midway point, but it's always great when you're going to have a Super Bowl because, you know, I mean, that's, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, let's face it. Anybody in television would love to be a part of the Super Bowl, and I've had a chance to do it year in and year out. So it's I'm looking forward to it.
Before we get into Super Bowl, NFL, pregame stuff, all that, let's recap what happened last Sunday with Jimmy Johnson since I got you here, and that was a great moment with Jimmy learning he was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. Tell me, just give me like what it was like being there, and if you want, I'd love to hear, you know, how much you knew beforehand, if you had to be in on the planning. How did it all go down with Jimmy?
I can tell you, first of all, I mean, I will say I've been on the pregame show for 14 seasons now. And did games for 10 years for Fox before that. So in my 24 seasons, this is by far, I think, the most joyous number one event that I've been a part of. And it was so cool. But it was hard, though, because I knew on Friday. So our producer, Bill Richards, found out last week. Obviously, you know, David Baker had to set it up and come out and plan everything. So I think there were Eric Shanks, I think Mark Silverman, Brad Zager, Bill Richards, all executives. And then I was the only non-executive who knew about it. And I found out on Friday. But I was obviously sworn to secrecy. So the Bill Cowher thing happens on CBS on Saturday.
Right.
Which... everybody was watching, and obviously it was a great moment for him. It was great live television. But then it spurred up all these text messages from, you know, people within our group, from people outside our group to Jimmy, people wondering, well, if he's going in, are you going in? And Jimmy's like, I don't know anything. You know what I mean? So then the bar gets raised because instead of everybody thinking you're going to wait until Wednesday for the announcement, now all of a sudden you see one guy out, and you're like, okay. So that really raised the emotion as we were coming in to do the pregame show on Sunday. So Jimmy and I are always the first two to get in. We get in, you know, Jimmy's there. Like, even on a week when we had a late game, he was in at 5 in the morning. We didn't have to be in until noon. So so he and I are the first two guys there. And we're sitting around, we're talking, and he's just kind of going over the emotions and about, well, you know, they're only going to put two coaches in. So if Cowher's in and they made that announcement, You know, I don't know what that means for me. And it's one of those things that Jimmy pretends he's gruff and he's hard and that kind of thing. But you could see, I think, with the emotion, how much it meant to him. But I knew, you know, that David Baker was coming and he was going in. But I had to play dumb.
Right.
And I'm just like, yeah, you know, who knows with the numbers. And, well, don't start counting. But, you know, but don't get your hopes up because I don't want you to be just, you know. So I'm doing that game, hoping I'm a good actor. So anyway, the day goes on. And the plan originally was to do it at the end of the pregame show. Well, the Kansas City game against Tennessee, or excuse me, against Houston went so long that we were getting towards the end of the pregame show. That game wasn't over. And, I mean, let's face it, you know, as a fan, you're not turning off a game that's going on, a playoff game, to watch a pregame show. So we're like, well, this might limit the audience. Why don't we try and do it a little bit later? And so then the thought process became, well, we can do it at halftime. Okay, that's a great idea. So what happened is, story long at this point, we moved it to halftime, and it became a more emotional event because after it happened, Jimmy told me, he goes, you know, when it didn't happen on the pregame show, after seeing it happen to Cowher on the pregame show, I just assumed, well, I'm not going in again this year. And so I made my peace with it. And so when you said that, and I turned around and I saw David Baker walk in, he goes, that's when it hit me, because I was thinking fully I wasn't going in again this year.
Right.
So it made it a more emotional, I think a better moment for everybody, because you could see the pure joy, and it wasn't expected from him to happen on that Sunday.
Interesting. So if the Texans and Chiefs don't run long, yeah, you guys end up doing that in the pregame, and Jimmy's not as surprised as he was
exactly
at halftime. Yeah.
I think he was still been happy and all that, but it was, you know, in the back of his head, it was kind of like, okay, let me be on alert because it could happen, you know?
Was it hard for you at all to keep that a secret from, you know, Terry and Howie and Strahan and Tony Gonzalez?
You know, here's the thing. It was hard because we're all so close. I mean, and we talk and text constantly. I mean, in the off season, you know, we get together. I mean, we're truly friends.
Let me interrupt. I want to interrupt you. I just want to be clear. Terry Bradshaw texts.
Oh, he, believe it or not, yes, he does.
Okay.
But the problem with Terry, he voice texts. So it's good luck deciphering it half the time.
Okay, you know? I got you. All right, go ahead.
But we're all close. So, you know, we talk constantly. And obviously, again, after the Cowher situation, we talk more. Is it going to happen? Would it happen? Who knows? And again, I've got to play dumb. So it was difficult from that standpoint. But you put your television hat on, and it was an easy decision. Because you go, if they know, then their reaction is not going to be pure and genuine.
Right.
So if it can be a secret for everyone, and everyone gets surprised, then we're going to get a better reaction on television. So from that standpoint, it was pretty easy to keep.
Yeah, that turned out to be something. You know, I think for people to see Jimmy break down like that was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really see that from him. It's funny. You mentioned how, you know, a Chief Texans cutting into your pregame while they're on CBS. I've always wondered that. If the playoff time is a little frustrating for the pregame shows, because it happens to all of you, where the pregame show in the postseason with the schedule being different comes on while another game is going on, and it's like, who, you think, who's watching this if a game is going on? Does that play into your head at all? I mean, obviously, you just got to do the show, but I would imagine.
Exactly. And I think that's how you look at it. You just got to do your show no matter what, because, you know, I would think if you're a football fan, you're not tuning that game out. But you know what? Maybe it's your team that's playing and you truly want to see your team warm up, or you want to hear what people are talking about, you know, if you're a Packer fan, or you want to see a sit down with Aaron Rodgers. So there are people that are watching, just not as large an audience, but it all balances out.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's the years that, you know, we have a game that goes long, and CBS, you know, their pregame gets affected. So
right.
I think you just look at it that way, that in the end, you win some, you lose some, it balances out.
Do you have a relationship with, like, the pregame show hosts on the other? You know, you talked about the group text, obviously, with your guys, and that makes sense. I'm just curious, like, with James Brown, Rich Eisen, what kind of camaraderie there is there?
Yeah, no, there truly is. I mean, I think Rich Eisen told a story not long ago on his radio show that at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year as well, and it was spurred by Mike Tirico, but a group text just among the hosts, you know, myself, Eisen, Tirico, JB, and Sam Ponder, and Carissa Thompson as well. So everybody's thrown in, you know, hey, go get them, have a great season, kind of thing at the beginning, and then at the end of the year, just about how fortunate we all are. And we just, you know, it becomes a group text among the hosts But I've always had a relationship. You know, I go back to, I did games for 10 years at Fox before being in the studio. When JB announced he was leaving and going to CBS, and I was a candidate to, you know, take over the studio, JB and I had a phone conversation. He was as helpful to me as anybody could imagine. And he was like, okay, look, when you're going through your test, and Scott Ackerson was the producer at this time, he's like, yeah, things are a little bit different than they are now. But he was like, look, they like 4 seconds for each scoreboard. And then when you set Terry up, he likes to be set up this way. And when it's Howie, it's this way. So it really helped me with my audition. But we had had a relationship before that, even before I was doing games at Fox, right, and I was doing local television. So I think that that has been established there. Mike Tirico and I have known each other. The guy who hired me to be the Monday through Friday sports guy in Dallas is the same guy who hired him to be the Monday through Friday guy in Syracuse, so our first anchor jobs. So we had kind of a symbiotic relationship from that standpoint, just kind of knowing one another based off of that background. And, oh, wow, you know, he hired you as well. And so back when he was at ESPN and I was still doing local television. So, you know, there's always been some semblance of a relationship. But yeah, we text back and forth amongst our group periodically. I was on Rich Eisen's show a couple of weeks ago. You know, his father passed away. Got into a nice text exchange with him about that. So I think that it's one of those things you look at. At least my approach has always been, you know, look, some people like strawberry ice cream, some people like vanilla. So don't get upset if viewers go, I watch CBS's pregame show or I watch yours. And there's enough for all of us to go around. So why should I dislike someone just because they work at a different network? We're doing the same job. You know, we're all trying to go out and provide for our families and have the lives that we want. So I've got no animus towards anybody. So I'm all in for us all being together.
Let's spend a minute, because you touched on it. I wanted to spend a minute on you getting the job at Fox. I mean, it seems like you've been doing that pregame show forever, and I think there's probably a decent amount of people who forget that James Brown hosted before you did. I remember you, I've been in New York my whole life, I remember you doing the sports on the local Fox affiliate here in New York on 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Did you go from that job to hosting, or was there something in between? Because I think that's how I remember it, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, I went from being at the Fox station in New York, WNYW Fox 5, and I went there in 95. And in 97, Fox asked me to go to NFL Europe to because I'd never done play-by-play before. And they asked, would you like to go? And so I went over there, and I did one game at the end of the 97 season, then went back again in 98, did two games. And then that fall, they put me on an NFL schedule. So I was doing the local news in New York and doing NFL games for Fox from 98 until 2004. Then I left Fox 5 because I decided I really loved the play-by-play thing, and I wanted to pursue that, you know, and you can't do the 10 o'clock news every night, I mean, unless you're on a station that has the games, and, you know, be able to do basketball, baseball, whatever. I wanted to try and expand. And so I went over and I worked at MSG Network for a while, and I did some Brooklyn Cyclones and some New York Liberty, WNBA, minor league baseball. And the idea was at that point that I was eventually going to get some shots and fill in doing baseball, you know, Major League Baseball or NBA games. That didn't work out for whatever reason. And so in 2006, so after 2 years there, I decided I was going to move out to Los Angeles and just kind of pursue it from that standpoint. But I was still doing play-by-play games for the NFL on Fox the entire time. And that was in January at the end of the season. I decided I was going to move to Los Angeles. At the end of the championship game that year, James Brown announced he was leaving to go to CBS. So it happened to coincide with my pre-planned move to Los Angeles. Contacted the people at Fox and was like, hey, you know, I'd be interested in that. Obviously, you know, my background, et cetera. And then the ball just kind of got rolling from there. So it wound up being what looked like a planned transition that was unplanned the whole time.
Gotcha. Okay. And I'm curious, because you said you love doing the play-by-play. So when James Brown announced he was leaving as host of the Fox pregame, was that all you to make the decision to go for that job? Did Fox ask you to try out for that job? How did that come about where you replaced JB?
It was a little bit of both. It was a little bit of both. You know, I think that when I found out about it, I said, hey, you know, I don't know what you guys are doing, but, you know, I would be interested in whatever process goes on from here. And then that kind of got the ball rolling. I remember I was actually in Australia when David Hill emailed me and said, hey, when are you back? Because we want to bring you in to do an audition. And so it was a matter of, I loved doing the play-by-play, but I really, truly only done NFL. You know, like I said, some WNBA and minor league baseball. But studio was, you know, what I'd done all my life. I mean, I'd been doing, I started in local television when I was 19 years old. And so, you know, when you're sitting behind the desk and, you know, obviously doing highlights and doing local news is different, but that's a position that I was used to. So it was a natural, I won't say fallback, but a natural position for me to say, if there's an opportunity to do this at this level, I'd be a fool to turn it down in pursuit of hoping to get, you know, an NBA gig with an expansion team, because Charlotte was just coming back in the league at that time, and that was a gig that I was up for, and crossing your fingers and hoping those kind of things happen. So, and it turned out to be, I mean, now it's the best decision I ever made,
right?
You know, in my opinion, I'll say right. It that way.
And how was it when you first started in terms of fitting in with that crew there? Terry and Howie especially have been there forever. Jimmy's been there. He had that little gap where he wasn't there and he came back.
Right.
Obviously, Strahan and Gonzalez are sort of the newest guys. But I think, you know, I think when people hear Fox NFL pregame, I think Terry and Howie are the first sort of names that come to mind. So when you took over for James Brown there, was it just fitting right in? Was there a little transition period? How'd that go for you?
No. Look, this is the 26th season, and you mentioned Howie and Terry have been there all 26. Jimmy went back and coached the Dolphins for 4 years, so he's been there 22 of the 26. So, I mean, this was an established group, and I was the first major change. You know, I said that Jimmy left for a period, but the other three guys were there. So, and the show at that time had been number one for 12 straight years. Fortunately enough for us, 26 years now, but it was 12 straight years. So I'm thinking, okay, if this show goes to number two, there's only one major change. That's me. So who are they going to blame? You know,
right.
So you feel that pressure when you start. And I've told the story before that when I got the call, Ed Gorin, who was running Fox Sports at the time, called me up and said, hey, you know, you got the gig and here's the game plan, et cetera, et cetera. And we were starting out. It was going to be, I don't know if you remember this, we're on the road the first year. We kind of did the game day thing where Joe Buck hosted the first 45 minutes. And then I hosted the last 15 minutes, and I did the halftime, and then we split the post game, and it was not well thought out.
Yeah.
But anyway, I called David Hill up, who is the CEO, and I was like, okay, you know, thanks a lot for giving me this opportunity. I really appreciate it. I'll do everything in the world not to let you down. You got any words of advice? And David goes, yeah, don't fuck it up. I'm like, okay, well, if that's the kind of advice you want from your boss, you get a new job. So
right.
That put the pressure on me right away, I think. And so you go in, you try sometimes too hard to fit in. And I tell the story sometimes when I do speeches. You know, you go in, and I remember thinking, okay, this show is rolling. And again, I go back to any change, it would be me. So the camaraderie and the sense of humor and all that is a big part of what makes our show, I believe, work. So you want to come in and you want to just seamlessly fit in, but the guys don't really know you. It's hard to force that and make it happen.
Right.
So we're on the road, week one, we're in Jacksonville, and I make this joke about Bradshaw and all his divorces. Now, at this point, I don't know if Terry knows my middle name. I don't know if he knows my last name. Forget that. So I'm like, it just kind of didn't go over well, but okay, you know, you work it out. Week two, I do this other just absurd joke, and it fell flat. But I'm forcing, I'm trying. And I'd heard after week one that Bradshaw was not happy about it. But, you know, again, I'm like, well, I don't know what to do. I'm trying to make this work. So I'm walking down a hallway at Fox after week two. And Roy Hamilton, who was running Fox Sportsnet at the time, you know, played basketball at UCLA back during the Wooden days and all that. He was an executive at Fox. And he says, he had nothing to do with our pregame show. Zero. But anyway, I'm walking down the hall, and Roy sees me, and he goes, Kurt, you got a second? I go, yeah. And he says, come in the office. And I sit down. He goes, look, you got the gig. Calm down. Be you. The reason they hired you is because you're you. Don't try to be somebody else. And it was almost like the Hallelujah chorus saying in my head. I got it.
Right.
You know, it was the words I needed to hear. And later on that week, Howie Long called me. And was like, hey, man, I'm just telling you, everything's fine. You know, we all like you. Don't worry about it. Don't press. Just come out and be yourself. Now, I don't know and I've never heard to this day, was there an internal meeting? Was there something that happened? But having two people tell you that in the same week, I went back in there that third week, and I was so much more relaxed. Now, obviously, over the years, I've become more and more comfortable doing it.
Right.
But I think I tried so hard those first 2 weeks to force it. It proved to be a lesson to me is that you can't. You just got to let things happen naturally. And when you get put in a position, what Roy said, you got the gig because you're you. be yourself and the rest will take care of itself. And that was a lesson I think I probably needed to learn, and I'm glad I learned it quickly.
It doesn't sound like you, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, the advice they give you the first season is don't fuck it up, but then they come out with this crazy plan to put you on the road and only do the last 15 minutes. And, you know, it didn't seem like they put you in the best position they had to succeed.
Even David Hill admitted to us all, it was so funny. We were at a little seminar the following year when David told us, okay, we're going back in the studio. You know, it's just Kurt's going to be, you know, the host, blah, 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 blah. He goes, it was the dumbest idea I ever had of putting this thing on the road. And I go, well, it actually worked out well for me, so I'm fine with it, you know?
Right, right.
So in the end, it wound up being a good thing. But they admitted right away it was, you know, I think it was just a matter of it was the first forced change that the show had. And again, things were rolling and the ratings were good. And at that point, you don't know what's going to happen when you have change. You know, will the balance of power between us and CBS shift?
Right.
Who was going to be this guy? I mean, you know, if you go back to it, Kurt Menefee, and again, I'm not pretending I'm freaking Brad Pitt or anything, but like Kurt Menefee at that time was doing the fourth or fifth game at Fox. So, you know, I was doing a lot of what I call milk games. You know, 2% of the country was seeing it.
Right.
So, you know, if you take this guy and stick him in the studio, and people may have or may not have seen him, don't really know him, you're taking maybe a bigger risk. Whereas if by being on that road, having Joe as part of it, and people becoming a little bit more familiar with me, even though it probably wasn't the wisest decision in the end as far as the logistics of it, I think it helped me because it helped transition. I think it gave the national audience a chance to kind of, you know, at least get to see my face and hear my name, but also gave the guys a chance to get to know me.
Right.
Because anybody who's traveled for business or whatever, you know that, you know, there are times you're at the bar, you have a beer, or you have a dinner, or things that happen that would never happen if we just going in and out of the studio. So I think it helped to create a better relationship between myself and the guys.
It is amazing. I mean, listen, what pregame show you like is all preference and subjective.
Yeah.
And but, you know, I think it's, you know, you've mentioned about the Fox pregame undergoing very few changes. It's been the last couple of years, I guess, with Strain and Gonzalez where they've tweaked it. But there was a long period there where it was really just you and Terry and Howie and Jimmy, and I think...
Well, think of this. Strahan has been there for 12 years.
That's crazy.
And he's the new guy on the main set. You know what I mean? Everybody else is changing every year, every 2 years, every 3 years. You know, Tony came over, and he's been with us, I guess when you count the halftimes and stuff, it's been 2 years now.
Right.
But he's been at Fox for, I think, four, you know?
Right, right. Because he started on the other pregame beforehand. But it isn't... I mean, it is the most... You know, listen, it's that weird... corny cliche about, you know, TV, it's like a family. I mean, I think that's the impression with the Fox pregame that NFL fans would probably get more than. I mean, listen, it is, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, you know, Jimmy loves doing that show so much and loves you guys so much, right? He's got this sweet deal where he like flies in from Florida to just basically do the pregame. He jets out. He doesn't have to do the halftime of the postgame during the regular season. I mean, that you would think, you know, a guy like Jimmy's probably got his money and lives that nice life. He could give it up, but he still wants to do the show that badly that he does that sort of, you know, wacky schedule.
Jimmy can speak for himself, but I think he's been public about saying this before, too. I mean, you know, Jimmy is 76 years old. And as you say, I think he feels financially secure. He loves his life in the Florida Keys. You know, he fishes every day. But he says the only reason he does this is because he loves the guys.
Right.
He loves the camaraderie. He loves being around us. And I tell you, you know, Jimmy's a bigger texter than maybe any of the rest of us. but, you know, I mean, it's a year-round thing with our group. We have a boys' trip that we do every year. The last couple of years, it's been Vegas. But, you know, we'll go to the Keys at Jimmy's place or we'll do Howie's place in Montana. We will get together our families separately. You know, we'll go down and visit Jimmy sometime or – Howie's wife and my wife text each other like high school girls half the time. You know, I mean, so like there's a bond that I think that shows on Sunday. And again, I go back to this is my belief of why our show works is because we genuinely love and care about one another. And so when we get into a studio on Sunday, we're not pretending that we're friends and we're not pretending that we like one another. And it works the other way around, too, that when someone, you know, gives you a jab or you don't get to talk in a segment as much as someone else, there's no jealousy. There's no anger. There's no, this guy's trying to make me look bad or one-up me. Because That's your brother. That's a guy you trust. So you don't worry about those things. And so I think that relationship, as far as human beings and who we are as people, is what makes us work as professionals.
Do you pay attention to the ratings at all?
The answer is no. And I know it sounds, again, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but the gap has become so wide between us and everybody else that I don't pay attention to it from that standpoint. But we always hear, obviously, hey, we had a show this week that was our, you know, biggest of the year, or, you know, the ratings this past season were the highest they've been since 2015. So you hear these things, but I never check out on Monday, how do we do? But that's always been my approach, because I go back to, you know, I worked local television in Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, Madison, Wisconsin, Jacksonville, Florida, Dallas, Texas, New York. Some of those stations were the number one stations. Some were the number four out of three. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, I can't control that. All right. I can do is go out and do the best job I can. That's always been my approach. And so I don't worry about the numbers, because I can't make you at home flip and watch my channel. You know, you're either tuning in or not. So that's always been the approach I've taken. So I've never been somebody who tracks the ratings on a daily basis.
You mentioned it, and Fox PR has touted it this week. You guys, NFL on Fox, had your most watched season in 4 years. What do you attribute that to? What do you think the reason is for that?
Look, I think they're from a game standpoint and a pregame standpoint, I think this was an exciting year. As far as, you know, there was a time where we thought, okay, if we lose an A quarterback, then that team's screwed. And that proved not to be the case. The way the game is played now, younger guys are more prepared to play. So, you know, a quarterback gets hurt, the team is still alive. Teams were in it throughout the year. We had different storylines, new guys, you know, new faces around the league. I think that is part of it. But part of it is also, let's be honest, since the ratings were down for the last couple of years compared to where they were. So now they've bounced back up to where they were. And I think that's really the bigger story, is that it's bounced back to where it was. You got to increase to get there. And being down was just a blip. And I think those reasons that they were down, whether it was the election in 2016, which I still think that people, you know, don't pay enough attention to, and it's going to be interesting to watch in 2020,
right?
Because I think this election is going to be just as you know, hyped, as polarizing. I think the cable news channels are going to do just as big a numbers, all those kinds of things. So I think that it may be one of those, it'll be interesting to watch going forward. But I think that really the story is that we've gotten back to what I consider the norm after a couple of years of having taken a dip.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. We mentioned the Super Bowl. We'll get into it a little bit in a sec. But obviously before that, you have the pregame this Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, leading into Green Bay, San Francisco NFL title game. And then, obviously, 2 weeks from then, Super Bowl in Miami on February 2nd. Your pregame show starts at 1 o'clock Eastern. Game kicks off at 6:30. Give me your mindset going into a pregame show like that when it's all day, basically.
Look, so I know before us is going to be the kickoff, so my duties won't start on that Sunday until 2 o'clock Eastern. So, see,
okay.
I've even got extra time, so I'll put my feet up and just relax for a minute. It's just that you look at it, and, you know, it sounds weird, and you go, God, you got 4 hours, you know, plus, because the game kicks off at, what, 6:18, 6:23, whatever it is. But that last, after 6 o'clock, it's, you know, national anthem, it's a flyover, all that stuff, so we're pretty much done. So you're on from 2 to 6, and it's 4 hours, which is obviously four times the length of our normal pregame, but it doesn't feel like it. When you're doing a Super Bowl, I don't know, it's the energy of the day, it's the quality, I think, of the pieces. You know what's on the line for everybody. And those 4 hours, I don't know if it seems like this is a viewer or what, but it seems like it flies by. It really does. So I don't worry about, oh my gosh, it seems like it's so long, it's so long, it's so long. And also, I think, you know, this has been a year where we had a two-hour show at West Point. We had a two-hour show on Thanksgiving. You know, both of those in front of a live audience. That kind of, I don't know, got the ball rolling a little bit, if you will, as we go into this Super Bowl season. So I'm looking forward to it, because I just love, I mean, there's nothing like the energy and the drama of Super Bowl Sunday when you're the network that's hosting it. At the same time, I'm also appreciative of the fact we only have to do this once every 3 years. You know, I talked with Rich Eisen about this. They do an 8.5-hour pregame show, which I don't know how you do.
Right.
And they do it every year.
Right.
I mean, it's mentally and physically taxing, not just that Sunday, that week. Now, look, we're not digging ditches. We're not saving lives. You know what I mean?
Of course.
So, but it's a high-stress situation, and I'm glad we do it every 3 years instead of having to do it every year. But when you're doing it, it truly does fly by, and I love it.
This is your fifth. This is going to be your fifth Super Bowl with Fox hosting. Now, everyone knows what the Super Bowl numbers are. You know, it's a holiday, basically, in this country. Obviously, I would assume you're a little bit more ramped up than on a typical Sunday in, you know, October. But do you get nervous at all, or it's just old hat and you're just doing a regular pregame show now?
You know, I go back to I've always felt – people ask me all the time, oh, do you get nervous? You know, Super Bowl's got $150 million potentially, and, you know, versus a regular Sunday where you got $5 million or, you know, what – I'm like – I go back to – and, again, I'm not trying to be Joe Calm here, but I've never looked at it that way. Because I go back to, I think having done local television prepared me for so much, not just from being on air and you know, learning how to speak or, you know, back when I did, I was a one-man band. I had to shoot, I had to edit, I had to write. You know, you did everything. So it taught me a bunch of different skills. But I think one of the other things it taught me was to not worry about who's watching. And I go back to the rating thing we mentioned earlier. I always took the approach, I'm in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and there may be three people watching me on television. But one of those three people could be someone who's looking to hire me in the next job. And he sees me and go, he kind of mailed it in that night, or he wasn't that good. I think I'll pass on it. So you never know who's watching or what the impact is. And also, it's your name out there. It's your family name. So you want to represent well. So I take that approach with every single week. It doesn't matter whether it's week one, week 10, or Super Bowl. And I just try and treat everything the same and just go out and do my best each and every time.
You had mentioned, I'm going to shift gears here and then we'll wrap. I got a couple of quick lighthearted ones to wrap up with. But you had mentioned, obviously, you did, I think you said you did the play-by-play for Fox for 10 years, the great 2% milk line. And I know you still do the Seahawks preseason games during the preseason. Is play-by-play something you'd eventually want to get back to? Or are you like, you know, listen, I'm staying in this host chair as long as they'll have me here at Fox?
Yeah, they're going to have to physically drag me out of that host chair. And at my size, it may take two guys to drag me out. So, you know, I'm planning on staying there as long as possible. I enjoy doing the play-by-play. And that's part of the reason, you know, I look at it from two standpoints. The reason I have continued to do preseason football play-by-play. You know, because a lot of guys, actually, who do play-by-play are trying to get out of doing preseason or don't want to do it. So, for me, I think the approach has always been I love doing it. I love being around football. I love going to training camps. I love being around teams. And when you're in the studio on Sunday, you don't get to do that. You know, I don't get to do Friday production meetings. Don't get to meet young guys who are just coming into the league, new coaches, those kinds of things. So I travel around to training camp every year. I still say, I think this year, I saw 16 teams, but usually it's in the 20s. So that's a big part of it, is just the love of football and just truly enjoying doing it. And so you get that with play-by-play. The other aspect of it, though, is I'm a realist. Nobody knows what the future is in this business. Nobody knows what happens if all the executives at Fox get blown out someday and a bunch of guys come in and they go, you know what, we want a different guy as a studio host. Well, at that point, you go, well, I did play-by-play 20 years ago. You know, that skill doesn't necessarily something you can drop and pick up again, I should say it that way. So I think it helps keep me, look, it's preseason football. It helps keep me sharp to a certain degree, but it keeps me in the game as a play-by-play guy. So it's a joy, but there's also a practicality to it, at least in my mind. But I don't plan on leaving the studio until they force me out.
And speaking of play-by-play, you're going to be doing play-by-play for the XFL. You're going to be partnering with Joel Klatt.
And I think that's one of the things that gives me a chance to do both.
Right.
You know, I can do the NFL studio from, you know, September until February, and then I get to my play-by-play fix for 11 weeks after that. And I'm looking forward to that, working with Joel. I think he's been on your show before. I think Joel is one of the gems in this business. First of all, he's a good dude, a good family man. But I think he's brilliant on air. I really do. And so I'm really looking forward to being in a booth with him.
I would assume, I mean, you're going to call this as a straight broadcast, right? I mean, it's the XFL. I think people are expecting something a little maybe different or offbeat. Well, the first time it was around, you know, Vince had his announcers calling games. Obviously, they're trying to make it, for lack of a better word, I don't mean it to sound you know, this is more legit. But yeah. It's still, you know, it's not the NFL. So I don't know if is the approach to have more fun with it, call it like an NFL game. What's the approach going in?
No, I think the approach is to, for me, is to call it like a football game, you know, and I think preseason football kind of prepares you for this. You know, I did NFL Europe for 10 years as well, you know, which, you know, I mean, we know the guys, and a lot of people have heard, you know, whether it's James Harrison or Kurt Warner or Jake DeLome, that were trying to get their shot in the league or move from a practice squad. This is kind of, in my mind, a similar thing, even though this is its own league and not a developmental league for the NFL.
Right.
It is something that you've got guys that we all know where they want to be. I mean, you know, let's be realistic about it. So I think that it's about telling their stories, but from a football announcer standpoint, it's about football. The difference will be between this and what you see on an NFL Sunday is that there'll be some technological advances and differences, but we're going to have a lot of access. You know, we'll be able to hear the coaches, he calls the players. We'll be able to interview players on the sideline during the game. We'll be able to talk to players and coaches from the booth during the game. And obviously football takes precedent over it, but being able to hear a play called and then having Joel explain it is an element you can't have on an NFL Sunday.
Right.
You know, you may try and see what the defense is doing, those kinds of things. But it all goes back to football. That's not gimmicky. It's football-y, if you will.
Right. Are you just dealing with Fox executives on this, or does Vince McMahon have ever communicate?
Yeah, no, for me, it's all Fox.
Okay.
And we had a seminar where we went to New York, and we were together with the folks from ABC, ESPN. They, you know, had us all in the room just to kind of go over some of the logistics of the league and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the XFL people are all football people. You know, it's Oliver right. Luck, who I keep going back to NFL Europe, but he ran NFL Europe when I was there. Obviously, was head of the NCAA and commissioner at West Virginia, and AD at West Virginia, and everybody knows him as Oliver Luck's dad, but he's a football guy.
Right.
You know, Doug Whaley is one of the operations guys who was the general manager of the Buffalo Bills. Dean Blandino is the head of officiating. I mean, so these are football people that are involved in this, and this is all I've dealt with. Everybody's right. been football.
Back to the pregame show for a sec, because I wanted to ask you this. We mentioned all of the guys, Howie and Terry and Jimmy and Strahan and Tony Gonzalez, but you had an addition this year with some shows with Gronk.
Yeah.
Was working with Gronk, I'm not gonna ask you if you liked it, because I'm sure you liked it, and that's a stupid question, but was it what you expected, or did he do anything that surprised you, anything unexpected? What was the Gronk experience like for you?
Well, you know, if you've ever been around him, if you've ever seen him on TV, you've been around him, because that's
right.
who he is.
He is a big kid.
If you've been around him, yep. you kind of knew what to expect. So it fell right into line, I think, as to what we expected. I guess the one difference is that I did realize, if you target him in on a specific topic you want him to talk about,
right.
his football mind is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really is. He can give you the ins and outs of a play, or how to defend a guy, or about just, you know, what's trying to go on from a football standpoint. It's not, he wasn't that successful being goofy as a football player. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's some football smarts that are there. And if you channel him in that direction, I think he was surprising to me in how in depth he could be and how knowledgeable he was, at least able to verbalize it.
Right.
From that standpoint.
And with Gronk too, it's not just football smarts. I don't think he gets enough credit for hanging it up when he hung it up and realizing.
Yep.
You know, what was at stake here, which we just saw with Luke Kuechly as well. And, you know, Gronk had, you know, throughout his career, he made it known the paycheck he got from the Patriots went right in the bank, yeah. and he only spent yep. his endorsement money. So, you know, while you see him on TV and he may not be.
He is who he is.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I compare him to Bradshaw in that
right.
Gronk, like Bradshaw, has figured out a character that people love. That he plays to, but it's the character's him. You know, it's not a fake person.
Right.
Like Bradshaw's not a fake country guy.
Right.
He is that guy, but he plays it up.
Right.
Gronk is not a fake bro, but he plays it up. There are times you can sit down and talk to both of them and have a totally quote unquote normal conversation. They can talk about other things in the world and things that are going on. They're both really smart about football. But they figured out the identity that works best for them as a persona, and that's what they hype.
Yeah.
And again, they're both genuine about it, though. It's not fake.
Yeah, and I think that's why people like them. It's that simple. No one cares if Gronk isn't a wordsmith or the most eloquent person. It's,
right.
You know,
right.
If he's being authentic, that's it. Is there a Terry moment that sticks out in your head live, you're doing the show, where he says something? It doesn't even have to be controversial. It can be wrong, controversial. Is there something where he said something where you were like, oh, my God, what did he just say? Is there one that, like, sticks out?
I don't know. I think it's just more the names. You know, look, doing these highlights at halftime, people don't understand, on the fly. It's basically, hey, here's a sheet. Because we do halftimes live for each game. And sometimes it can be six games back to back to back to back. I mean, you know, seriously, 30 minutes in between a halftime segment. I mean, 30 seconds in between a halftime segment.
Right.
So he gets handed these names because someone just scored a touchdown on the fly. And watching him do those, we all die. It's not easy for anybody to do. But I think that are the things that we laugh about, and just how he screws up a name, or he'll get the most challenging, difficult name correct, and then screw up a Johnson or Jackson. You
right,
know, those
right,
kinds of things.
Right.
And I think, I always go back to one of the first ones, I think, trying to remember, I think it was Dexter McCluster, who played for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
And, you know, I call him Duster McCluster or something like that. You know, so those kind of things, they just make you laugh out loud. I think he's got the ability to laugh at himself, which allows us to laugh at him. Not that we wouldn't anyway.
Right, right.
But it certainly helps.
Fox should compile those and sort of make a little compilation video for YouTube. That would be a big hit.
It would also be a multi-part special, but yeah.
We'll take it. Okay, I'm going to end this on something totally bizarre that has nothing to do with football. I was scrolling through your Twitter feed in preparation for this interview, and I saw you exchanging tweets with Richard Christie from The Howard Stern Show, and I'm a huge, huge Howard guy. Now, are you a Howard guy, or are you just friends with Richard specifically?
I'm a Howard guy, and by being a Howard guy, I became friends with Richard. The way we met, actually, was some people know about, there's a big charity event in Kansas City called the Big Slick. And Jason Sudeikis, Paul Rudd, David Kirchner, Eric Stonestreet, and Rob Riggle are the celebrities who are all from Kansas City. They do it and they raise money for the Kansas City Children's Hospital, which is one of the biggest children's hospitals in the country. Mm-hmm. And they crossed the $10 million mark this year, all this kind of stuff. But they have this big celebrity event every summer in Kansas City. It's a whole weekend, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I've gone a couple of times, and I think Paul was on the Howard Stern Show, and
right,
he was talking about the event. Richard Christie, being a guy who's from Kansas, got to talking to Paul, and Paul was like, hey, why don't you come this year? So Richard went to the event last year for the first time. I wound up meeting him. We wound up hanging out together there. I got to meet Richard Christie's dad.
Oh, wow.
And his mom. Yeah, they were really cool, and they obviously, I won't say obviously, but they watch our show.
Right.
So they wanted to take, like, pictures with me, and I wanted to take pictures with them. You know, it was one of those.
Oh, that's great.
So then Richard and I stayed in touch. I just saw him. I was in New York last week just to promote the new dog show I'm doing on A&E.
Right.
And so we went out and had a beer and that kind of thing. So, but we, you know, text all the time and see each other whenever we're in the same city.
Oh, that's
rare, but
right,
that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's where that came from.
That's great. I love Richard. He's the best. And
he is. I'm telling you, he really is. And I use the word genuine, and I talk about, you know, our show and the personalities. But he is. He's a genuinely
right,
nice guy. You listen to the show, there's some weird things that go on if you listen to Howard Stern Show.
And very, very really weird, is. Very weird things. Very weird things with Richard too. But he, yes.
But yeah, he's a sweetheart.
Yeah, it's funny because with the, you know, I'm a big Stern guy. I tweet about it all the time. So I have people on Twitter follow me who know I'm a Stern guy. And with the Chiefs in the playoffs, I've been getting tweets every time they play about, you know, we need the Chiefs for Richard. We want to see Richard cry on the, he cried last year when he got to talk to Patrick Mahomes. So it's funny that Richard's a little bit of a storyline here with the Chiefs, maybe headed to the Super Bowl.
Oh, I know. Yeah, trust me, he's over the moon about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird because he's a Chiefs fan. His wife's an Eagles fan.
Right, right.
And so she was heartbroken, obviously, when they lost last week.
Right.
And he is just on this roll because, you know, the way the game started on Sunday, I think he was thinking, oh, boy, here we go again.
Right.
And then it turned around. So,
well, maybe,
so I'm rooting for them for him.
Yeah, if the Chiefs make the Super Bowl, maybe get him on the pregame show. That would be phenomenal. We could Richard Christie.
That would be something.
Unleashed on America. All right, Kurt.
I don't know if at that point, though, he'd be cohesive enough. Let's just put
right,
it that way.
Right. That is true. He likes his pumpkin beer.
Exactly.
I appreciate you coming on. Enjoy the NFC Championship.
Anytime, man.
Yep, and enjoy the Super Bowl and get through that long day. And thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
All right. Anytime.
All right. Take care, Kurt. All right, that wraps up this edition of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My thanks to Kurt Menefee. Enjoyed speaking to him. And keep in mind, next week, Brett Musburger, and the week after that, Kevin Harlan will be appearing on this podcast. So if you're not a subscriber, hit that subscribe button, and you could rate and review as well. That would be super helpful. All right, that wraps it up. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.